All right, we left off yesterday at the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Bet. The Gemara is discussing the machlokus between Rav and Abaye, whether when there is no, when you are the first party to put something by the border between the two properties, do you have to actually preemptively space away from the border in order to allow for the other party later on to put in the same item? That's what Rav's opinion is. Or Abaye's opinion, which is, no, that if you come to the Meitzar, if you come to the border and there's nothing there, then you can put it directly up against the border. You don't have to give any buffer between you and the other property. So now, Gemara is going through different Braitot Mishnayot to bring a proof. So we're at the bottom of Yuzayin Amud Bet, where it says, Tashma, machikim et gefet, vet zevel, vet melach, vet sid, vet slayim mikodlo, shel chaviro, gimel tvachim, besad besid. Alright, so now the mission says that one has to remove gefet, which we said was psolet zeitim, the leftovers of the olive press, right, the dung and salt and lime, as well as these rocks, which we said before were these fire rocks. You have to move them away from the wall, at least 3 tefachim, and plaster, so protect against the wall. Where it says, time adika kotel. The reason that you have to distance it from the border is because there's already an existing structure there, which is the wall that divides between the two properties. Aleka kotel, had there not been a wall there, somech, then you could have placed it right up against the border. All we're worried about here is the existing wall. We're not worried about in the future if something would be placed there. If that's the case, that supports Abaye's position that one can, when there is no other factor involved, one can place the item directly against the border between him and his neighbor. Where he says, "Lo, kileka kotel nami lo somech." Even if there's no wall there, you can't place it on the wall. Ve'elamayka mashmalan. So then why bother putting in the wall? If the wall is not a necessary ingredient to having the distance, then why place the wall there? Akamashvalan, dahanu kasha the kotel. That these are items that are not, that will deteriorate the integrity of a wall. So the list in the Mishnah is also teaching us what you don't want to put next to the wall because they will affect the structural integrity of the wall. Now, Tashma, machikim et ezraim, v'et amachresha, v'et meraglaim min akotel shloshat fachim. So again, this is part of the Mishnah that says you have to distance, right? Planting, if you plant, or if you plow, or if you urinate, you have to move at least 3 tefachim away from the wall. Taimo, the ikakotel, again, the factor that seems to be driving the need or necessity for distance is the wall being there. If there was no wall, samich, you would have been able to place it right up against the border, again supporting the position of a bayit. Lo, kileka kotel, nami lo samich. So even if there is no wall there, you couldn't place it right up against the wall. Elamayka mashmalan. So then what's the chiddush of the Mishnah, right? If there is, why is it putting the wall in there if it's not necessary? Akamashmalan, demitunta, kasha, le kotel. That comes to teach us that anything that is, you know, wet or lach, something that is moist, is bad for, again, the wall. It affects the quality or the structure of the wall, and therefore you should distance oneself from the wall with these items. Tashma, one must, again, here we learned these items in the Mishnah, et rechayim gimel min ha-shachav, shein dalet min ha-rechev. So you have to take the mill, you must move it away from the wall, right? Your base must be 3 tefachim away from the wall, which is 4 tefachim away from the millstone itself. Time of dika kotel. Again, the diuk that the Gemara is making is that there's a wall there, and that's why you have to distance it. I like a kotel. If it was not for the kotel, somech, you could place the mill directly on the border. Lo, you like a kotel nami lo somech. Even without a wall, you can't place it on the border. Elamai kamash malon. So then what's the chiddush here? Kamash malon, di tiraya kasha the kotel. Right, that, as we learned in the Mishnah, is that the movement or the shaking, the vibrations are bad for the wall. And therefore, that's what it's teaching you, that by a mill, don't place it near the wall because those vibrations will affect the wall. Right, Tashma, Veta Tanur. So we went in the Mishnah, right, the Tanur has to be Shlosha, Mina Kaliyashe, and Dali, Mina Safa. The way Rashi learned that, that was the base of the Tanur, right, the bottom of the base must be 3 tefachim away, and the top of the base will be 4 tefachim away. And the Rabbeinu Chananel, as we said before, discussed, as Shaul pointed out, it's a pot-bellied oven, and therefore the base is 4 tefachim away, but the pot belly itself is 3 tefachim away from the wall. So again, time of Dika Kotel, the factor that makes it that you must move the oven away from the wall, away is because of the wall. Halakakotel, had there not been a wall there, Samich, you could have placed it directly on the border. It says, lo, Even without a wall, you can't place it there. Elamaika mashmalon. So then, what's the chiddush? Hakamashmalon, the havlo, kashlo, the kotel. So it comes to teach us that heat is bad for the wall. So here so far, the Gemara has brought in the Mishnah, each time trying to prove that Abai is right, that the factor in the Mishnah which determines or forces one to provide a buffer is the wall. And each time the Gemara rejects it and says, no, even without the wall, you'd have to provide the buffer. Then why is the wall mentioned in each of these instances? And so the Gemara in each time is that we're telling you items that are not good for walls, meaning that they compromise the integrity of the wall. And that's what each of these items in the Mishnah is listing, or the Chiddush and mentioning the wall in the Mishnah. So now, Tashma. Lo yiptach adam chanut shel nachtomim v'shel tzva'im tachat otzro shel chaveiro. That a person may not open up a bakery or a dyeing store below the storage of his friend. I mean, that we're talking about here in the residential neighborhoods in the town, and you have people who have a storehouse above this, well, it seems to be a commercial spot, and you can't open up a bakery or a dyeing store right under below them, below Refet Bakar, and you cannot place a cowshed below this Otzer. Why? Time of the Ika Otzer. Sounds like the whole problem here is that there's a storehouse above. Now, what is the problem here that there's a storehouse above? Now, how like Otzer? If there was no Otzer, then the Gemara says you could do it. If there was no Otzer there, no problem setting up all these objects. Gemara says, Dira Shiny. When it comes to living quarters or residential neighborhoods, it's different. Now, what does that mean, Dira Shiny? So Rashi says, what's the issue with putting these stores below the Otzer? What do people store in the Otzer? People store their oil and their wine. And Rashi says in the Otzar, thank you, and the Vashan, Kashelahem, and the smoke, right, coming up from these bakeries or from the dyeing processes, the heat will affect the wine that is above detrimentally, and therefore you can't place it there. Now, when the Gemara answers Dira Shiny, what does it mean that it's Dira Shiny? So Rashi says, it's an unbelievable thing, Chanut Verefet Bakar Diratam Shaladam. When it comes to stores and cowsheds, these are the normal way people live. And we can't oser someone to do something which is otherwise normal living if it's not that the damage is direct. Right? I mean, not where it's indirect damage or future damage, but it has to be directed damage. What Rashi is saying is that when we talk about zoning, residential zoning, like today we think of commercial zoning versus residential zoning, according to Rashi, what's included in residential zoning is cowsheds and stores. I mean, that's all part of residential zoning, so that would not be something that was extraordinary if a person put a cowshed or a store in the residential neighborhood or under the otzar that's there. Right, so residential types of industries, like you're saying, cottage industries that are coming out. Now, the Rabbeinu Tam does not like Rashi's explanation. The problem here is the smoke that's bothering it. So Rabbeinu Tam says that it's not the smoke, but because you have already, you have a ceiling above it, you have ceilings, you have plaster on the floor. That's not going to be affected by it. But what they're worried about is the heat, right? Which is the heat coming up will hurt the otzar. And he says he doesn't even think that it'll hurt the wine. He says because the heat will help the wine, it'll increase the fermentation process, so that it's what they're worried about is the integrity of the otzar that's above. Because you're doing heavy-duty baking heat items down below when it comes to dyeing and the bakery, and that will affect the storehouse above, not what's in the storehouse, but the storehouse itself, right, will be problematic. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says, as opposed to the items that are stored in the storehouse. But either way, the Gemara's assumption was at first that the Otsar was the factor. The Gemara says, no, but it has to do with Dira Shiny, that when it comes to living quarters, you can't bring a proof to here from this situation to fields. I mean, Abai and Rava addressed open fields and borders in open fields. Here you're talking about, right, a Mishnah that's discussing issues that are within the residential neighborhoods. So residential neighborhoods don't bring me proofs or issues from residential neighborhoods to a question about Sadot or adjacent fields.
Because Rava is not in residential areas.
Right.
You're not restricted unless the thing that you're damaged is
it's directed damage, right? Very good. That's correct. So now the Gemara says, "Deikanami," so that I can prove to you that dira shiny, right? Dira is not the same. Detani Allah, we have a right. We explained about this Mishnah. Ita refet bakar kodemet laotzar. If the cowshed precedes the otzar, mutar. It's fine, just fine. Now, why should that matter? Meaning that kedimut should not matter if you are doing something that's impermissible in that area. If you're doing something impermissible, just because you're there first, doesn't mean that you have any rights. The fact is that if it's, right, if you say, dear shiny, that this is a permissible type of behavior, then it would matter, right, whether you were first or not. Right, Tashma. Loita adam ilan samuch l'sadeh, elim kein herchik memenu dalad amot. That a person should not plant a tree near a field, right, meaning that his friend's field, unless he pulls away from his friend's field at least 4 amot. What is the fear, or what is the problem we're worried about over here, is that you have to work the trees. And when you work around the trees, you're going to step into your friend's property in order to work the trees. So what we want to do is you want to leave, but this is as otherwise known as a vodata kerim, which is the amount of space for working the vineyards. Obviously, it's not vineyards, right? Tosfos says like a borrowed term that we use vodata kerim, but it means a vodata ilan, that we need to leave space around the ilan in order that you can work it and not step into your friend's property when you're working it. So now, the dalet amot that we have here is, v'tani Allah, dalet amot shamru, k'dei avodata kerem. It's in order to allow for working over here. Again, it's not like literally a kerem, right? But a kerem is a term where the Mishnah uses such a term of avodah, 4 amot, so the Gemara borrows it from there and uses it by ilanot also. So you have to leave these 4 amot in order to prevent you from going in, stepping into your friend's property. Gemara says, time mishum k'dei avodata kerem. The whole reasoning here of distancing or spacing over here is because you must have workspace, and we don't want you to step over the border. Halam mishum k'dei avodata kerem. Had we not had that factor, right, which was where the fear of you stepping over, samich, right? You could place it right on the border. Afgav deika sharashim the kamaske. Despite the fact that when you plant the tree directly on the border, you're going to have roots that cross over into your friend's property and cause damage. So despite that fact, you're allowed to place it right on the border, which is supported by his position, that even when you put up a boar, or you put up something that might in the future cause damage to your friend, nevertheless, you're allowed to put it adjacent to the border, right on the border. Just like we said before, right, or over here we're saying also, that the tree that you place on the border, right, despite the fact that in the future, the roots from this tree will affect your friend's property, nevertheless, we don't ask you to distance it. Where it says, Hachamai Skinan, what are we doing with over here? Is the mafsik tsunama, that there's a bedrock between your friend's property and yours. I mean that you're planting the tree right on the property, but there's bedrock there, so the tree's expansion will be limited on that side towards your friend. So Mar says, the right girsa over here is that we can see or we can understand this from this Gemara, which is Deikanami, but the other possibility is that the Gemara is Tashma, that this is another question, right? But Hayah Geder Bintayim, if there's a wall between the two properties, Zesomech the Geder Mikan, Vezesomech the Geder Mikan, that you're allowed to put the item proximate to the border right up against the wall. Right? Somebody says, because what's the problem over here? The whole problem is we're afraid of a vodata kerem, right? Going and working around the trees. If you're working around the trees, and you're going to step over to your friend's body, property. If there is a wall there, there's no fear that you're going to work over into your friend's property. There is a demarcation which will not allow you to extend beyond the border. The Gemara says, okay, if that's the explanation, that it's a tsunama, that it's bedrock that's separating over here, and the whole the whole reason that you're allowed to plant proximate to the border is because there's bedrock. And when there's a wall there, we allow you to place it right up against the wall, right? Because we don't have that fear of overstepping into the other person's property, despite the fact that you might have roots that go under the wall. There we say, no problem, it's all bedrock, and therefore it won't spread. Or it says, okay, I'm a safer. What are you going to do with the next part? If your roots enter your friend's property, he can cut away all the roots of your trees in his property until he gets to reach the depth of 3 tefachim, so that his plow will not be caught on your roots. Now, if you're talking about bedrock separating between your property and your friend's property, how are the roots getting there? I mean, how is the Mishnah then bringing a case? Well, what? If the roots do reach your friend's property, then he can cut them back. If you're talking about a bedrock separation between you and your friend's property, then what's the question? How could you ever have your roots enter his property? The roots don't go through the bedrock. They will go in the other direction. That's the assumption of the Gemara over here. So this you have to add a little, nuance, a little wording or amendation to the Mishnah. Ilav tsunuma, right? Had it not been for the bedrock, and the roots do enter your friend's property, then mamik shloshat vachim, kedei shelo kiva machrisha. Right, so that the Gemara says that the Mishnah really is talking about a case of bedrock, and that's why it's not a proof to Abaye, because the reason you can put it right up against the border, adjacent to the border, is because there is protection against you overstepping the bounds of into your friend's property, either because we demand from you to place it 4 amot away, or because there's a wall there which doesn't let you go into your friend's property. Number two, the shorashim, the roots, which will provide or present damage to your friend's property in the future. We don't worry about that because there's bedrock sitting between them. All right, then the Mishnah has the next case which says if there is no bedrock and the roots do go into your friend's property, he is permitted to cut away the roots until the depth of 3 tefachim. And then at least...
Planter,
where did he plant it?
Alright,
so that's the question. Where did he plant it? Over here? That's the next mission that we're going to speak about. What's the demand? Where can he plant it and it be permissible that the roots go into his friend's property?
This doesn't save face for Rava, apparently. There's still a problem for Rava because this is showing that, okay, well, the guy can't plant close because the field owner can just chop away at his roots.
All right, but that's a question of that Lex's case. Where did he plant it that the roots are actually entering? And that the Mishnah is, if you already amend the Mishnah, we don't know where he planted it. And that's the next Mishnah, which is Tashma, Marchakim et Alilan min Abor, 25 Shema. Person must plant a tree 25 amot away from his friend's bor. Taimo, Dika bor. Sounds like the reason that you have to move the tree back is because there's a bor that the roots will affect or, degrade the walls of the bor. Halak a bor. There not been a bor there, Samech. Then you would have placed the tree right up against the border, and then you'll come up with a case where the roots can enter into the friend's property, and despite the fact that, right, the Rava would believe in these cases, you have to give the same distance. Lo. Kilek a bor, nami lo somich. Even without a bor, you can't put it on the property. Raka mashbalan. The Mishnah is teaching us what is the distance one must leave in order that the roots do not, right, affect the other person's bor, the other person's property. Where it says, Yochim a Seifa, then what are you going to do about the Seifa of the Mishnah? Im Ilan Kadam, if the tree was there first, Lo Yikotz, you're not permitted to cut the tree down in order to put your boar in there. V'hitalo Samech, Hecha Mishkachala. How could you, meaning that the Mishnah just defined for us that the extent that roots reach is 25 amot. Now, all of a sudden, we come in and there's a tree planted there. And how did the roots enter his friend's property? The only way they could enter his friend's property if they were less than 25 amot away from his friend's property. Which means that he planted the tree less than 25 amot away before there was a boar there. Which would support the position of Abaye. The position of Abaye is that when there is nothing to damage, when you plant the object, or you put the object there, you can place it as close as you want to the border. And that's exactly what the case that you have here. You placed it less than 25 amot, which is the demand to prevent damage. You would have to place it at least 25 amot away. Here we're permitting you to do it within the 25 amot. That's why the roots are in your friend's property. Had you planted it 25 amot away, it wouldn't matter. The roots would never reach there. Kedam Rapapa, Rapapa says, no, this is a case of lokeach. Right? That's we're going to bring Rapapa in a second. Achanami belokeach. Case here is that he purchased the property. So what does that mean, he purchased the property? That the tree was planted originally 25 amot away from the border. So when he planted, then he went ahead, and this is Machlokas Rashi and the Ri over here, whether he sold it or he bought it, whatever the, one of the two, it really has no nafkamina in terms of it. Right, so it was planted beheter, and then he subdivides his property. The seller goes ahead and keeps where his tree is, but he sells off the other half of his property. Which is within 25 amot in his tree. So once he does that, the tree was placed there originally, beheter, and the roots are reaching into the other property because they are less than 25 amot away. But the individual who buys the property knows when he buys the property what he's getting. Right? There's no surprises here. There's a tree there before he starts. And if he knows there's a tree there, he buys it and accepts, right, all the circumstances that exist. The pre-existing conditions he has to accept when it's sold to him. So therefore, when you have a subdivision of a property, you can come into a situation where the tree is planted, there was planted more than 25 amot, or at least 25 amot away from the border, like Rava demands. Yet, you have a situation in which the roots now can reach into his friend's property because, right, it is now sold to him, because it was sold to him. It was sold to him, therefore he has accepted anything that happens over here. Right now, Tashma, and again, the other way could be that he purchased it, right? The question of how the land was subdivided, did he sell it? The original buyer, the original person planted the tree and then sold off half his property, or did a buyer buy the whole property and then subdivide it, right, and then sell it off? Right, Tashma, marchikim et ha-mishra min ha-yerek. Right, so we had this in our Mishnah, a case where you have to distance the flax, soaking flax bed, which is some sort of pit in the ground where they soaked flax in it. You have to distance that from the yerek, from the vegetables. Veta krishim min ha-btzalim, and leeks from onions. Veta chardal min ha-dvorim, and mustard from bees. And so in all these instances, we make a demand on you to distance your crop or your commercial enterprise from the other individual, because whatever you're doing is going to damage the other individual. But again, what is it? Taima de ika yerek. Right, the whole problem here is that your friend has something on the other side which you are going to damage, and that's why we're asking you to do distance it. Halakha yerek. Had it not been for the factor that would damage your friend's crops, then samich, you could place it right there on the border. So again, a proof to a buyer against Rava. The Gemara says, no. Kileka yerek nami lo samich. You can't, even if there's no vegetation there, you cannot place it there. Akamash malan. What is it teaching us then? The Mishnah, dahani kashu adodi. The Mishnah is telling us different items that are bad for each other. Know that flax soaking is bad for vegetables. Know that onions and leeks don't get along. I know that bees and mustard seeds are not a good match. That's what the Mishnah is teaching you. You always have to distance from your friend's property. But also, let me just tell you, don't put these types of items together, because they are detrimental to each other. So now Gemara says, Eihachiyem Aseifa. What are you going to do with the second half of the Mishnah? Rabbi Yossi Matir B'chardal. Rabbi Yossi says it's perfectly permissible to do it by mustard seeds. Mipnei Shecholo Marlo, Ad Shatah Omer Li, Harchei Kardach Lacham in Devorai. Before you tell me to move mustard away from your bees, take your bees away from my mustard, because they come and eat up the ligluge. It's not a three-way machlokis what these liglugim are over here, whether they are seeds, whether they are the flowers, or whether they are the leaves of the or branches of the mustard. Whatever it is that they are of the mustard plant, right, that the birds come along and these bees come along and they nibble on them, and so they do just as much damage to the mustard as the mustard does to the bees over here. Mar says, "Ve'i delo samich, if it wasn't close enough, heicha mishkachala." What's the case? If the demand is that you always have to distance yourself from the border, whether or not the other party has something there, then how can you ever come into a circumstance where the bees are affecting the mustard? If you set up a beehive, or if you set up a mustard field, you must distance it from the border in order to allow the other party. I mean, if you have a beehive, you must distance it enough that the other party could plant mustard on his side. If you plant mustard, you must move it away from the border enough so the other person could set up a beehive on the other side. That's Rava's opinion. So how could you ever have a case where they're so close or so proximate that they're damaging each other? Must be that when there is no factor, meaning that when there was originally no beehive, then you could plant your mustard right up to the border. If there was no mustard originally, you could put your beehive right on the border. That would support the position of a bite. Umar says, no, I'm a rapapa. This is the original rapapa that we were quoting before, is below keach. Right, that it was a case of purchasing. So when you have a case of purchasing, then the properties, you were put it down with the rights. And since you put it down when you were permitted to do such a thing, and then you subdivided property later on, then we say to you, that's how we come to a circumstance where there is damage being done, even though it was done originally, like Rava suggests, which is it was distance from the border. Mar says, if it's a lokeach, my time at the Rabbanon. What's the position of the Rabbanan? How can the Rabbanan demand over here or make a claim over here that you must distance, right, the chardal from the bees if the case is of lokeach? Case of lokeach, right, the whole circumstance was set up originally. Everybody knows what the situation is. So then how could you make a demand on him to all of a sudden remove the hezek over here if the situation was well known when he made the purchase? So Mar says, oh, my time with the Rabbi Yossi. And what is the position of Rabbi Yossi? Right? Because afilu mishra v'yarkadami. If the whole issue is lokeach over here, I'm sorry? Yeah, we did that. Lokeach my time at the Rabbanan, which is, what is the reasoning of the Rabbanan? If everybody knows the information that is as set out over here, we know the information that's set out over here, why should the Rabbanan have a demand on the person to remove his item? He was sold a field to plant mustard. He was sold a field with mustard in it. He sold the field, right? How could there be a demand that you have to remove it now? I mean, that was information was all known at the time of the sale. And from Rabbi Yossi's side, my time of the Rabbi Yossi, I feel a mishra v'yakonami. According to Rabbi Yossi, why is this unique to mustard and bees? It should be true of Yerek and the Mishra, because if it's all about a sale over here, then why? The issue is not who's first or who's doing damage. The only issue is, was it a pre-existing condition? If existing, it was pre-existing, then Rabbi Yossi says, if you make a sale, then nothing to talk about, right? So why should there be a differentiation? So Amar Ravina, Ravina suggests over here, Kasavir Abanan ala Mazik, Archik et Atzmo. Right, that it's the demand is on the mazik to distance himself over here. So Rabbanan believe that whoever is doing damage must move themselves away from the other individual. So in all these cases, who's doing the damage? When it comes to the right Mishnah and the Yerek, who's doing the damage? The Mishra, right? The flax. When it comes to the Krishim and the Bitzalim, who's doing the damage? The Krishim are doing the damage. When it comes to the Chardal and the bees, who's doing this? Who's doing the damage? Well, according to Rabbanan, who's doing the damage?
That's why
Rabbi Yossi. Okay. The question is it Machloket Mitzuyot?
Right. That's what it sounds like. Right. That the who that damage is the bees are damaged by the mustard. So it's on the mustard individual to remove it. Why do they damage the bees? Because the bees come and eat the mustard, which sounds like Rashi is little harif. In order to offset the mustard taste, they have to go and eat their own honey. So what ends up happening is they consume their own honey instead of leaving that production for the right the beekeeper. So that's why the mustard seed is a problem here. So the Rabbanan believe it's always the obligation of the one who's causing the damage to remove themselves over here. Michlau. So from that you can infer the Rabbi Yossi Savar la Nizak la Chakika Datzmo, that it's the Nizak who has to remove himself. Yo, Nizak, afilu mishra v'yarkanami. If the obligation's on the Nizak, then why is the answer of Rabbi Yossi only by Chardal and bees, where he says, you know, let the beekeeper move it away as well. Also by Mishra and Yerek, tell him to move the Yerek away, because he's the one who's being Nizak. So he should have to move himself. Where it says, no, Ella.
This is the next line that it's. Okay. So Rabbi Yossi is the Masik. But even, right. How can you even have a Hava Amina?
Right.
The Nizak should move him. Someone is Masik. He's the Masik. You ask the Nizak that you go away.
Right.
Even the Hava Amina is.
Well, the Gemara, we had this in the end of.
The person, don't put something of yours in place where you can reasonably assume that it's going to be harmed.
Right, that's the Gemara in Nedavah B'Mitzio. We saw this machlokas, we're going to see it again today, which is that there is a machlokas, whether it's the Nizak or the Mazik is obligated when you have a right to place something in that place. It's not like he doesn't have rights. This is his, if equal usage rights, whose obligation is it to prevent there being a problem? Now, you could say it's on both of them, or you could say it's on the Mazik or on the Nizak. Elo le'olam, Rabbi Yossi Nami ala Mazik, right, so that he says it's on the Mazik sphere, that he believes both the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi believe that the obligation devolves upon the Mazik, just like David is suggesting over here, that everybody thinks that it's the Mazik who must distance the damage over here. V'hachi kamadu Rabbi Yossi the Rabbanan. Tinach mishra v'yarka dahani maske hani. V'hani lo maske hani. That what? There's only unidirectional, right, damage being done here. It's the flax damaging the yarek, but the yarek doesn't do any damage to the flax. Elachardal dvarim tarvayu maske adodi. When it's bidirectional, meaning that the damage is caused by both parties, then how can you make a statement? Ala mazik la'archik. There are two mazikim over here. There's not a mazik and a nizak, it's a mazik and a mazik. Rabbanan, so this is what you were saying, it's a mitzius issue. Dvarim lechardal lo maskile. That the dvarim do not hurt the mustard. Why is that? Ibe benita. If you're talking about the seeds in the ground, I mean that they planted the seeds and the bees come and eat seeds, they don't do that. Bees don't eat seeds, so there's nothing to talk about. Right? That's why actually the Re before said Ligluge should not be seeds, because over here we see that seeds aren't relevant to bees.
Ibe tarfa. But the fact that they addressed it, you know, shows that it was at least a to be a
right, but the fact that it should be something that's concerning, that really is a concern, which is that Ibe tarfa, if we're talking about tarfa, which are leaves, right, the leaves are the of the tree, then hadar pare, they'll regrow. I mean, if they nibble on the leaves a little bit, then all right, they'll grow back afterwards. What are you so worried about? So the Mar says, Based on that, the Chachamim said there's nothing the bees can do to hurt the chardal. So then Rabbi Yossi obviously disagrees and says that there is a problem which we saw before, which is the liglugay, right? Chardalai. That the problem is that the liglugim, they get affected by it. Now what those, Rashi says that those are the flowers. Again, the Aruch says that those are the garinim. And the Ri says that those are the nafim, the branches. That there's some sort of damage that is impacted by the fact that the bees go over there. And there is something that is done that is not absolutely rectified afterwards. All right, so now, is it really true that Rabbi Yossi believes that it's on the obligations on the mazik to distance himself? We have a Mishnah, right? Rabbi Yossi, even if the boar, right, was there first, and then someone plants a tree whose roots are going to now enter and damage the boar, nevertheless, you're not allowed to knock the tree down or cut the tree down. Right? This is Shaul's basic approach, like Rabbi Yossi, which is each of us gets full usage of our property. Right. So that is, each person has full utility of their property, even if there is some side effect on the other person's property. As the Gemara says, if that's the case, how could you say that Rabbi Yossi believes ala mazik to distance himself? Over here, it's clear that the mazik is who is the one who planted the tree. There's a boar that already existed. You're planting a tree after the fact. So when your roots are going to come in, it's clear that you are the mazik. And yet, nevertheless, Rabbi Yossi says there's no demand for you to distance this tree in your property. So when it says Ella Olam Rabbi Yossi Ella Nizak Sphirly, right? So now Rabbi Yossi says now the obligation is on the Nizak to distance himself. Ule Divrehem Dirabanan Kamerluhu. And he's speaking the Lashon of the Rabbanan. That's again, the Gemara Bava Metzia solved the problem this way too. Gemara Bava Metzia tried to explain the Machlokas in the Mishnah, whether it's Mazik and Nizak. And the Gemara came along and said again the same thing, that the answer here, which is that it was the Divrehem de Rabbanan that Rabbi Yossi is speaking in this Mishnah. So it says, Ala Nizak Larchika Tatzmo. So he says, Ludidi, according to me, the Nizak is the one who has to distance himself. So there's nothing to talk about over here. Bafilu Mishra Biyarka. Right, that lo bai rechukei. And it even comes to the earlier parts of the Mishnah, where it's flax and vegetables. You can say over there that there's no reason that the flax owner, or the flax soaking owner, has to distance himself from the border because he's the mazik, and the nizak is the one obligated. He has to move his vegetable. You don't want your vegetables to get damaged? Move them away from the border. Ela didchu. He says, you, the rabbanon, da'amritu ala mazik, that believe that it's the mazik's obligation to remove the damage. Tinach Mishnah Yarko, you can talk about Mishnah Yarko, and we can talk about Betzalim and Krishim. That's fine. Da'ani maski hani, v'hani lo maski hani. Because if there's only, again, unidirectional damage, then you can make a demand on the mazik. Ela chardalu dvarim tarvaru maski adadi. By the chardal and dvarim, that there is bidirectional damage. And if you're saying it's on the mazik, then both parties are mazikim over here. They should have to remove themselves. For Rabbanan, again, their position is dvarim lechardal lo maskile. Right? When it comes to bees, bees do not affect the mustard. And therefore, since the bees don't affect the mustard, they don't have any issue. They're still there. It's equivalent to all the two other cases in the Mishnah, which is that there's only one mazik over here. If there's one mazik, the mazik's got to move it back. So the conclusion, right? Lo maskile. Ibe benita, again, lo mishkachale. If it's seeds, they don't damage. Ibe tarfo. If it's the leaves, hadar pare. They will regrow. They will re-blossom those leaves. So therefore, there is no damage being done over here. So the conclusion of the Gemara is, just like it was the Gemara in Bava Metzia, the Tosfos points out, why does it, the Gemara here deals with an issue, which is a Mishnah coming up. Rabbi Yossi, why don't you discuss over there, Alam Azik Vala Nizak? Gemara says that, since they got into it already, they did the whole sugya over here, even though it really doesn't belong here. It belongs by that Mishnah. But the answer is that Rabbi Yossi believes that it is ala nizak lecharchiket atzmo. The Rabbanan believe it's ala mazik lecharchiket atzmo. So now, once we have that in place, now we have to explain their positions, right? We can explain their positions in the Mishnah coming up, which is by the tree and the boar. Chamim say when there's a boar there already, you can't plant the tree proximate to that boar within 25 amot because you are now the mazik. If you're the mazik, right, then you must move yourself away. And if you don't, yikotz. We're going to take your tree down. On the other hand, right, if it's Rabbi Yossi's opinion, who says, Ali Nizak, the Chakika, that's Mo, you use your property. You may utilize your property any way you like. You plant a tree. All right, the roots are going to go into your friend's property. That's too bad, because it's Ali Nizak, Chakika, that's Mo, even if he was there beforehand. Now, how do we explain the Mishnah here by Yerek and Mishra, Kishim, Bitzalim, Dvorim, and Chardal? That, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi and Ochanami would believe that you don't have to distance yourself at all over here. Why? Because Al Nizak, they're achiket that small. So when you come and you have your soaking, flax soaking pool, you have your krishim over there, you have no obligation to move them. The other party feels a little, you know, affronted or offended, let him move it away, and he'll protect his stuff. All right, so that'll be true of all the cases in the Mishnah. Then the Rabbanan come along. It's ala mazik lachachika, that's small. The demand is on the mazik. So in each case, we go to the mazik and say, move your stuff away so you don't damage your friend's property. All right, so now if you say ala mazik, so what's Rabbi Yossi's machokas here with the Chachamim? Is this the same machokas? No. Rabbi Yossi is coming to Rabbanan and saying, okay, I agree with you. Our differences in opinion can explain Mishra and Yarka and Betzalim and Krishim, but it doesn't explain Dvorim and Chardal, because the Mitziut by Dvorim and Chardal is different, which is that they are damaging in both directions. There's a bidirectional damage. If that's the case, according to you, who thinks the Mazik is obligated, both parties should have to move away over here, because both of them are Mazikim. So if that's the case, you have to make the demand. Either both parties should have to move, or neither party should be obligated. Why are you only obligating one party? Chachamim respond and say, no, this is similar to the other cases. There's no difference. We don't believe that there is bidirectional damage over here, because we don't believe Devarim hurt Chardal, as opposed to you who thinks that the Devarim hurt the Chardal. We don't believe that. So therefore, we think it's the same as Yerek and Mishra and Betzalim and Krishim, and the Mazik here is the Chardal planter, and he must distance himself. Rabbi Yossi says, no, it's Elenizak. Elenizak is, you can put your chadal wherever you want, you can put your bees wherever you want. If I don't want my damage to be done to my property, I got to back away from the property in order to prevent damage to myself. All right, so that's the problem here. Ababa and Abaye, and that's what these big Tosotim over here is trying to explain what's happening with Abaye and Rava over here in the Mishnah. Who is this when we say Bishlamar, when the Habaminas and the conclusions of the Gemara, each question along the way, is it good for Abaye, is it good for Rava? Right, that's what Tosfos deals over here. It's very, very, I mean, I'll tell you this.
And then ending up with this Machlokas Tanayim.
Which is not really relevant to the whole case. Right. Well, that's exactly what Tosfos says. It doesn't belong here. So let's start with that. This whole machlokas of Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan getting through that whole sugya of whether it's mazik and nizak, it's all relevant to the Mishnah further on, not really relevant to our sugya.
Okay, now we're going to go through the Tosfos and explain the Gemara based on the two opinions in the Tosfos.
So the Gemara asks, if you cannot create or put something adjacent to the border before your friend has brought something there, how do you ever come up with a case where, first of all, the Rabbanan make a demand only on one party to remove the damage over here? And number two is that Rabbi Yossi believes that each party has an equal claim over here. So Gemara says, and the way Tosfos explains, says, according to Abaye, it's no problem here. Because Abaye says you can place an object on the border when you are there before your friend. And therefore it goes, well, that works well. Because the assumption of the Gemara at this point in time is, number one, that the Balad Vorim, the beekeeper, was the first one to be there. And therefore he has the entitlement because he's there first. Number two is, everybody agrees that there's a two-way street here. Both the mustard damages the bees, and the bees damage the mustard. So now, according to Abaye, we can explain the case, or the machlokas, between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. Because according to the Rabbanan, it's the mazika sheni. The second party who comes along is, and who here is the mustard seed, or the mustard planter, to distance from the property. This is based on the Ri, had explained this on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Bet, that when it comes to, when you have permission, according to Abaye, to put something adjacent to the border, then when the second party comes, your neighbor comes and wants to place something there where you need to have a distance between you, he must figure in all the distance. So that second party now must put all six tefachim, meaning before each party should have put in, if they came together, each party should have to put in three tefachim. But here, since the first neighbor did it with permission, here the Balad Vorim, the beekeeper, did it with permission, then the second party, which is the mustard seeker, must now distance the full amount in order to provide or ensure that there is no damage done here. And therefore, in our case, the Rabbanan believe that only the demand is only placed on the Balad Chardal, the mustard person who plants the mustard, because he was the second party. If he's the second party, it's his problem, and he must make all the adjustments to ensure that there is no damage done over here. Rabbi Yossi believes that the beekeeper, even though he had permission to put it there at first, like Abaye says, and when he did it, he didn't do anything wrong, nevertheless, he did something that wasn't so nice. He wasn't so nice because he knows in the end that his friend or his neighbor is going to do something with that land, and that his bees are going to do damage over there. So therefore, if the beekeeper can come along and is allowed to damage, quote unquote, the property of the Baal HaChadar, the Baal HaChadar can respond to him and say, I'll do exactly what you did. You want to put it adjacent to the border? I'll put it just adjacent to the border as well. So now both of us will be adjacent to the border. Yeah, we both damage each other? Yes, but we're both acting in the same way. But why did the Gemara earlier say you can't do that? When it came to the case of a boar, when it came to the case of a pit, we don't say that when the second party comes along, you can say, listen, I'm going to dig a boar right next to your boar, just like you put your boar, your cistern, or your pit adjacent to the border. I'm doing the same thing. We don't have to leave any space between us. Because there, the Gemara said, that when it comes to digging a boar, it's mazik biyadayim. Because every time you dig into the ground, you shake the foundations of the other boar. So when you're digging, you're actually doing damage immediately. You're doing physical direct damage, and that you cannot do. So when it comes to the bees and the mustard, where it's indirect damage, there Rabbi Yossi says, look, you want to put your bees on the border? I'll put my mustard on the border. All right, you want not have damage? We'll both move away. But I'm not going to be subjected to have to move away when you don't have to move away. By boar, you can't do that, because when he comes to dig his boar, his pit, right next to the other individual's pit, he's actually doing direct damage, and direct damage we don't permit you to do. So that's why the Gemara says, according to Abaye, there's no issue here. The problem is for Rava. Rava says that lo samech, that when it comes, even when you are the first party there, you can't put adjacent to the border. You have to leave the proper amount of buffer that would be demanded if your friend had something in his field. And how can you ever come up with a case, according to this, according to Rava, where the Baal HaDvorim was there first, and he is legally there, and we can't make any demands on him, according to the Rabbanan? I mean, according to the Rabbanan, why does the mustard seed or the mustard planter have to move his crops and not the Baal HaDvorim? I mean, because according to Rava, the beekeeper did something wrong by putting it adjacent to the border. He should have moved away when he first put it there. So we should make an equal demand on the beekeeper as we do on the mustard planter. And according to Rabbi Yossi, since they are damaging each other, meaning since both bees damage mustard and mustard damages bees over here, then both parties should equally have the obligation to divide or move away from each other. Either they both move away from each other, or they both stick it on top of each other and they'll damage each other, meaning that there's no reason or compelling reason to believe that the Baal HaDvorim, that the beekeeper, has any advantage over here. And that's what the Gemara is faced with. How do we explain Rava in this Brisa, or based on this Brisa? So Amar Papa, Rav Papa comes along and says, no problem. We're talking about a case of Lokeach. We're talking about a case where the chardal was already planted, the mustard was already planted, and then this person sold half of his field, and the new buyer put bees on this property when he bought it. So the chardal, the mustard, had permission to be there. Now, according to Tosafot, at this point in the Gemara is already moving from the original assumption, which is that both bees hurt mustard and mustard hurt the bees, and now it's interesting to what the conclusion of the Gemara will be, which is that only bees are hurt by the mustard, but the mustard is not hurt by the bees. The Rashba, on the other hand, in explaining this position and the Shita of Rashi, does not do that. He says the Gemara still, at this point, believes that both parties are equally hurting each other. But now, according to Rava, we can come up with a case where you had permission to put something directly on the border. How do you have permission to put something directly on the border? Is when the field was originally not a problem, was owned by a single individual. And either now you have two buyers that are coming along, and each one of them buying the bees, and one of them buying the mustard seed, or that the mustard was already planted, and now, according to Tosfot, where the mustard's only damaging factor, the mustard was already planted, and then afterwards, the beekeeper comes and places his bees. So the Rabbanan believe, according to Rava, that Alamach is mazik l'chachikat atzmo. The one who's doing the damage must move himself away. Even though he was there with permission, meaning that even though the mustard person, or the mustard planter, was there with permission, because he bought it in that manner, nevertheless, we still obligate him to move it away. What about the Rabbanan? We see the Rabbanan in other places, for instance, by a tree. When you place a tree there properly, then we can't make a demand of you to move the tree. How come by a tree we don't demand of you, even though the tree's roots are going to damage the cisterns or the borot around it, how come we don't demand that you move it over there? So Tosus distinguishes, and this is part of the weakness in the Pshat, is that by an Ilan, by a tree, there's a hefsed merubah. There's a big loss to have to move it. The tree is supposed to be planted there for many years, and it's going to last for many years. If we ask you to move it later uproot it, that'll be a big loss. On the other hand, when it comes to the mustard or the bees, depending if you learn like the Tosfot or the Rashba, that the demand for you to move it is, it's a temporary situation. I mean, the mustard's there only is planted annually. And if you move it, right, next year it'll be fine and you'll do it with the buffer there. There's not a huge loss for you to move the mustard back. And therefore we demand on the mazik, we demand that the damager here distance himself from the border. Again, according to Tosfot, there are only one damager here, and that is the owner of the mustard. Whereas according to the Rashba, we still believe that both parties are damaging. But since both parties are damaging, and even though the mustard individual placed it there with permission, nevertheless, we demand on both parties now to separate and to split apart. According to Rabbi Yossi, right, the Dvarim hurt the mustard, and the mustard hurts the Dvarim. And therefore, it's up to the Bala Dvarim, the person who has the bees, has to move away. Because since the mustard was planted with permission, we don't place any obligations on him to remove the mustard. All the obligations now are going to devolve upon the beekeeper, because the beekeeper is the one who came second. If he came second, we're going to demand of him to move away. We're not going to demand of the mustard person who did nothing wrong to move it away. So now the Gemara says, Ibalokeach, if you're talking about Okeach, then we don't understand the Rabbanan. Why? Because the Rabbanan, according to Tosfot, and according to the Rashba in a different sense, the Balachardal, the person who put the mustard there, didn't do anything wrong. He did it with permission. The same thing when it comes to putting in the flax soaking or the leeks. Right, they were all put there with permission because he purchased that with it already existing. If he purchased it with already that it was already existing, then why should we demand of him to now have to move it later on? He did nothing wrong. So that's according to the Rashba what the question is. According to Tosfos, the Gemara now is reverting back to the state where that both the mustard and the bees hurt each other. If they're both hurting each other, then why can we make a demand on one over the other? Why should we have to make a demand on either party here? Because they are both equal in this sense. So also, according to Rabbi Yossi, what's the reasoning of Rabbi Yossi? If Rabbi Yossi believes that whoever is doing the damage, right, has to move away, then why can't the same thing be the case by the person with the flax and the person by the krishim? Since he placed it when they got the flax pool or they got the planted leeks, it was done with permission. If it's his, done with permission, Rabbi Yossi says there's no demand on you to remove or to move away the object. So if that's the case, why does Rabbi Yossi only argue about bees? Why doesn't he also argue about Mishra, about the flax soaking pit, and the Arka, and the vegetables, or the vegetation? Because in those cases, you did it with permission. If you do it with permission, we make no demands of you. So the answer of the Gemara, according to Rashi, is Amaravina Kasavi Rabbanon Alamazik Neharchiket Atzmo. Now, according to this answer in the Gemara, Ravina is continuing with the position of Rapapa that we're talking about a case of a lokeach, a purchaser over here, and the Rabbanan believe Alamazik. It's the Mazik's obligation Neharchiket Atzmo to move himself away. Now, according to Tosfot, who said before, right, that it was also the only damager here was the person who owned the mustard, and we said that the mustard individual must move it away, even though he had it there with permission. That's the conclusion of the Gemara over here. The conclusion of the Gemara is, yes, even when you put something there with permission, we're still going to demand of you to put it away when you are a mazik, because it's ala mazik l'chachikat etzmo. The damager is the one who's obligated to move the object away over here. And that's it. That is the conclusion of the Gemara. That's the difference. Whenever you have something done with permission, even if it's done properly, if you're going to damage your friend's property, we're going to demand of you to move it. And that'll be true of the Mishra and the Krishim too. Even if you did it with permission because you bought it, and it was there, it was already existing, nevertheless, we demand of you to move it away. According to the Rashba, who says that the Gemara still at this point in time believes that both the Dvorim hurt the mustard and the mustard hurt the Dvorim, the Gemara's answer over here is that when you sell something, the person who sold the property, I mean, when he sold the mustard or he sold the bees over here, when he sells one half of the property, he knows that he must remove what's on his property. I mean, when you sell the mustard to a third party and your bees are on your land, and then you know when you sell it, you've got to move your bees back, because nobody's going to buy from you mustard if they know that you're going to cause damage to the mustard that's there. And therefore, part of the sale, or implicit in the sale, is since you know that there's going to be damage done, the seller must move his damage away, because when he sold it with that in mind. Nobody sells property with the intent, or buys property with the understanding that they're going to get damaged. No, they buy the property assuming that you're going to remove whatever causes a problem for that property. And that'll be the demand according to the Rabbanan. And when you sell this property over here, both if it's, if you had a Mishra there, or if you had Krishim there, or if you have bees there, and they're going to cause damage to the other party, nevertheless, we're going to demand of you to move it, because when you sold it, that was the obligation you took on yourself to remove any damage. According to Rabbi Yossi, again, over here, the Dvorim hurt the Chardal, and the Chardal hurts the Dvorim, and therefore, the Bala Dvorim has to make all the distancing, because the Bala Chardal, the person who put it there originally, did it with permission, meaning that he did everything perfectly okay. If he did everything perfectly okay, then we don't make any demands of him to remove it at this point in time. Now, to raise what the problems are for the Shittariya Pirashi, the one problem is, number one, you have to even mechalek here between the case of Ilan and the case of Mishra or any other cases. I mean, that tree, the case of the tree, why the Rabbanan do not demand you to move the tree, whereas they do demand of you to move other mazikim, other objects that do damage, is because Ilan is special. It's got this status of being hefsed merubah, and therefore we're going to have to differentiate the Rabbanan's opinion there versus everywhere else, which doesn't seem to makes so much sense. And number two is, why not keep the Rabbanan's position consistent? Number two is, why did the Gemara wait until all the way down here to bring this Mishnah of Mishra and Yerek, which is our Mishnah, and all the way at the end, even though it was the earliest part of the Mishnah? I mean, it was earlier on the Mishnah. If this is continuing the same questioning or direction of the Gemara, why is it bringing it all the way at the end? It should have brought it up much further up in the sequence of the Gemara. And the third question, which is the Tosefta that we're quoting, that says, Rabbi Yossi Matir B'Chadal, Shomalar Kederach Shasita B'Toch Shalcha, Kach Ani Yosei B'Toch Shali. Just like you did in your property, I'm going to do my property. Mashmutz, from there it sounds like the Baal Dvorim Samach Tchila, that the beekeeper was there first, and the demands are now being placed on the Chardal. Whereas according to Rashi, or the way Rashi is learning it, it's not the case. The case is here where they were, according to the conclusion of the Gemara still, that both parties were there, or both thing items were planted, and then he sold it. If he sold it, right, there's nothing to do with one planted first or not planted first. It has to do with the lokeach, the fact that it was sold. And it doesn't sound like the Bala Dvorim was there first. Doesn't, according to our way we're explaining it now, it sounds like he sold the mustard, and when he sold the mustard, now he's got to move his bees. What it, his bees being there first are not relevant. So those are the three questions that the Rabbeinu Tam asks on the Shita of Rashi. So because of that, we actually come out with two different readings of the Gemara at this point in time. And that is the reading of the Gemara according to the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rach, and the reading according to Rashi, Piyari, and the Rashba. So now, according to the Rashi and the Rashba, in these instances, the Gemara continues. The questioning is continuing here. And at this point in time, the Gemara says, Michlal, we're going to conclude from this, the Rabbi Yossi Savar l'Nizak l'Archiket Atzmo, that it's up to the Nizak to distance himself from the damage, because the Rabbanan believe it's al-Mazik, that it's the Mazik's obligation to remove it. So if we say, or if we assume that the bees are not hurting the mustard, and the mustard are hurting the bees, then what do the Rabbanan demand? That the mazik, the person who's doing the damage here, must remove it. That's the chardal. That's the mustard. That must mean that Rabbi Yossi believes that it's ala nizak, that it's the nizak's responsibility to remove the damage over here. And who's the nizak over here? The nizak is the beekeeper. So the beekeeper is now the one obligated to move it back from the wall, even though, right, he is the one getting damaged. But nevertheless, he's the one's got to move it because ala nizak. Now, Tosos makes a statement here that this questioner at this point in time must not have known what the first questioner knew, or not known what the conclusion of the Gemara is, because the first questioner had no problem assuming that Rabbi Yossi, according to Abaye, was on the Nizak, that the obligation was on the Nizak to remove the property. So this Tana, or this questioner here, is asking a question as if that's something unusual or unacceptable that Rabbi Yossi should hold on Nizak l'chika d'atzmo. So Tosus divides up between the two parts of the Gemara. The first questioner who says, idlo samich hechi mishkachala, that questioner knows the conclusion of the Gemara and knows the fact that the Rabbanan are going to say that there's only unidirectional damage, only damage from the mustard to the bees, but not from the bees to the mustard. Whereas the second questioner doesn't know that, and he only is going to work through to get to that conclusion later on, which will be the premise for almost the first questioner. The Rashba has it a little easier, explains it a little better, because he believes that the first part of the Gemara was never switched. The first part of the Gemara always believed that both parties damaged each other. And despite the fact that both parties damaged each other, right, he's able to explain the difference between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi all the way through. And that's what the Gemara is up to at this point. The Gemara over here is trying to get to that conclusion that there's a difference between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. Now, that could have been the conclusion. We could have jumped to that conclusion. But that's what the Rashi says. We're going to work through it to get to that conclusion. So now, if the Nizak has to, always one who has to move himself, then why in the first two cases of the Brisa, Mishra, the flax pool, and the Yarka, and the vegetables, as well as the case of the Krishim and the Bitzalim, why doesn't Rabbi Yossi in that case also say Al Nizak? Why does he agree to the Rabbanan in that case that the person who's doing the flax pool and the person who's doing the Krishim has to move? Why doesn't he say that Al Nizak, the one who's being damaged, should have to move? If that's the case, right, then why should Rabbi Yossi, if you think Rabbi Yossi believes Al Nizak, then why should Rabbi Yossi differentiate between bees and the first part of the Mishnah? So Gemara says, okay, no. At this point of the time, we must believe, right, that it is, Rabbi Yossi believes that Al-Mazik, that it's on the Mazik also. Everybody agrees that it's the Mazik's obligation to remove himself. Ah, so the Rabbanan say it's Al-Mazik, right, but they believe, what's the difference between then Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi about whether it's the Mazik? Rabbi Yossi believes that there's bidirectional damage being done here. There's a Mazik of the mustard to the bees, and the bees to the mustard. Therefore, when we say Al-Mazik, La-Chika, that's both parties are Mazikim, so therefore we can't make a demand on either party. Whereas the Rabbanan believe, they would agree with Rabbi Yossi's position. If bees damage mustard, they would agree to Rabbi Yossi's position. But they believe bees don't damage mustard. And since they don't damage mustard, ala mazik l'archik, the mazik here is who? Is just the mustard planter. And therefore, he's the only one who's obligated to move according to the Rabbanan. So now we've come to the point, to the conclusion in the Gemara, where now there is this differentiation between, or the machlok between Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi is about whether bees damage mustard. Rabbanan believe, yeah, they don't. And Rabbi Yossi believes that they do. And that will explain the difference of their opinion. Now the Gemara runs into a problem because we have a Mishnah further on which discusses Ilan and Bor. It discusses that when you have a tree and a boar over there, the Rabbanan say if the boar, the cistern was there first and then you plant the tree, then we cut the tree down because you are the mazik. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says, I can plant a tree in my property. You want to put a boar in your property? So be it. We're entitled to do whatever we want on our own property. And I don't have to worry about when I plant my tree that it's going to undermine your boar, the roots are going to go into your boar. That's not my problem. So from that Mishnah, it seems clear that Rabbi Yossi believes that it's al-nizak l'archik, that the damagee, the one who's going to be damaged, has the obligation to distance himself from the damage. So how could you explain our brice over here that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbanan both agree that it's al-mazik l'archik? So the Gemara's conclusion is what? That the Divreim de Rabbanan Kamar Lahu, that the Rabbi Yossi is really speaking in the Rabbanan Shita. He says, according to me, it's on the Nizak to remove the damage here. It's on the Nizak to remove the damage over here. Then there's nothing to talk about because both parties are damaging each other. They're both Nizakin. They both got to move. You want to get rid of the damage, move yourself away. But according to you, Rabbanan, who said it's on the Mazik Naharchik, that it's the damager that has to move it, so I can agree with you by the flax pool, and I can agree with you by the Krishim, by the leeks, because there is only unidirectional damage. But in our case, in the Mishnah of Devorim, on the Tosefta of Devorim, of bees, and of mustard, there's bidirectional damage. Both parties are causing damage. Since both parties are causing damage, then you should agree that both parties have equal rights, or both of them are mazikin. If they're both mazikin, then why do we only make a demand on the mustard planter to move his stuff? And the Rabbanan's response is that we don't believe that. We don't believe that the bees damage the mustard, because whatever they eat will grow back. Whatever they do damage to will come back. And so if that's the case, we think there's only unidirectional damage. And the machlokus between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi at this point in time will revolve around Mazik and Nizak, who's the obligation on. In our case, in our Braisa, the Rabbi Yossi is only asking you, according to your own sheet of the Rabbanan, you should demand both parties separate. And the Rabbanan say, no, you misunderstood, or you don't understand. There's only unidirectional damage. That's the way that Rashi, Apiari, and Apiarashbo explains the Gemara over here. The Rabbeinu Tam and the Rabbeinu Chananel explain the Gemara differently. And that has to do with one small word, and that is the word Ella. In the Girsa of their Gemara, or they added the Girsa, to answer the questions that we had before in Rashi Shita, they say, Ella Amar Ravina. When Ravina comes in the Gemara and says that his solution, Kasavri Rabban ala Mazik la Chiket Etzmo, is the Mazik's obligation to distance himself, then the Gemara has now come to a new conclusion. It's dropped the answer of Rapapa of Lokeach. And now it's coming in with a new answer totally, that it's ala mazik, l'archik et atzmo. That's a new answer by Ravina, and that's why it says Ella. It means that Rapapa is no longer relevant. What does that mean for Abayin Rava? According to Rabbeinu Tam Rama and the Rach, Abaye and Rava has ended at this point in time. This is the end of the machlokas between Abaye and Rava. Why? Because the Gemara has now rejected all the answers we gave before. All those answers that we tried to do for Rava and all the Mishnayot and all the Braitot that we had, there were questions on Rava. We tried to answer in all those cases. The Gemara now rejecting all those answers and says, Rava says that just like Abaye, you can be somech to the border. You're allowed to put your stuff adjacent to the border. That our Rav agrees that when there is no wall there and there's nothing that you're going to damage, you can put your krishim, your pool, your flax pool, or your yerek, or your vegetables right up against the border. Why? Because it's the mazik that must damage himself, remove himself. And only when you are a mazik. What's the definition of a mazik? A definition of a mazik is that you're doing damage. If you place your item there before your neighbor has anything there, you're not a mazik. If you're not a mazik, we're not going to demand of you to move away. Ah, so where does Rava argue with Abaye? He argues only in the case of bor. He only argues in the case of digging a pit. Because there, where you preemptively dig the pit before your neighbor has anything there, nevertheless, at that point in time, you are a mazik. You're a mazik immediately. Why are you a mazik immediately? Because we said before, when you dig into the ground, when you go into the ground and you start to dig, you shake the foundation of the ground, you cause damage to the integrity of your friend's ground. So you are a mazik immediately. If you're in a mazik immediately, then we're going to demand of you to distance yourself, because ala mazik l'achiket, that's small. The mazik, we have a demand on the mazik to remove himself. So according to the way the Rabbeinu Tam and Rach learn, Rava now has conceded to Abaye's opinion. He only has one exception, that's the case of Bor. Every other case, he agrees. If you're there first, you're entitled to put it there, even though in the future, your object might cause damage. Because the future doesn't matter. When you placed it down, you were not a mazik, and we can't make any demands of you. Whereas when if you put the object there, the moment you put it there, it's a hezek. For instance, like digging a bor, where you're going to soften up the earth, you're going to hurt the integrity of the foundations of your friend's land. At that point in time, you're a mazik right away, and there we're going to demand of you to distance yourself from the border immediately. So now, the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rach, they benefit from being able to explain the Gemara now. First of all, they don't have to differentiate between ilan, a tree, and other objects, because the Rabbanan's opinion will be consistent between trees and other objects. They will always agree, the Rabbanan, that it's ala mazik. It's the mazik's obligation to remove the object. And that is, again, assuming that when you put it there, that it was the mazik who... You were a mazik when you placed it there. So whenever you're a mazik, we're going to say demand of you to take it away. So if he has a boar there when you plant the tree, we're going to make you take it away. If he has onions there, or if he has vegetation there, and you want to put down a flax pool or leeks, we're going to say, no, you can't do that. So the Rabbanan will be consistent. Number two, now we understand why this part of the Mishnah, even though it was earlier in the Mishnah, was brought at the end. Because this drives Rava to reject the, or drives us to reject Rava's opinion throughout, and Rava has now changed his mind that he's modeh to Abaye in all these cases. So this is upends the entire Gemara until this point. So now we understand why it waited until this point. And the third question we have, by the case of the bees and the mustard, now we can understand why it's, we can explain the case like the Tosefta, which is that the Baladurim, that the beekeeper was there first. So even though that he was there first, right, the Rabbanan say, listen, if he was there first, he doesn't have to move now, because when he brought it there, he was not a mazik. Right now, the Gemara can work through to the conclusion. The Gemara now goes on a tangent dealing with Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. Now, that tangent is brought up here to, first of all, to get the differentiation between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi about their views in bees and mustard, whether it's unidirectional or bidirectional. And once they're on that topic, they went on to explain the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi with regards to Nizak and Mazik. But as Tosfos says, this part of the Gemara is not so relevant to the Machlokas of Bayan Rava anymore. Bayan Rava, we've concluded. Now, we're just trying to understand Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. But Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi, independent of Abaye and Rava, nothing to do with Abaye and Rava. So that will be the key difference between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam over here. The Rabbeinu Tam believes that Rava stops at the answer of Ravina because Rava's Shita has been rejected all the way through. And what happens afterwards, Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan has no relevance to the Machlokas Abaye and Rava. On the other hand, Rashi says no, that Ravina is a continuation of the answer of Rav Papa, and as a continuation of the answer of Rav Papa, that means that the Gemara is still looking how to explain in Rava the positions of Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. And if you do that, then you have to do something like Tosfos does, which either says that the two questioners didn't know the same information, and therefore you have two series of questions that seem to be disconnected, or going to the Rashba, that the Gemara moves or changes assumptions along the way way, which is on the first part of the Gemara, everybody believed that it was bidirectional damage, and the second half of the Gemara was only, the Rabbanan believes it was unidirectional damage versus Rabbi Yossi, who thinks it's bidirectional damage. Had we known that conclusion all the way along, we wouldn't have had to go through the Gemara to get there, the second half of the questioning to get there, but that's what the Gemara is after. That's what the Gemara is doing. It's actually trying to investigate to get that point. But Abai and Rava are still relevant all the way to the end of the Gemara.